This podcast contains explicit content. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome to the Creepy Cannabis Podcast.
Welcome to the podcast. What do we chat about here?
That was creepy because of the cannabis. I'm Madeline.
I'm Rachel. We did our best. Listen, this is our second episode of the night because we're trying to cram everything in when we can really do it. So we're doing our best and you're welcome.
And we are here.
And Maddie's smoking the first strain of weed that doesn't smell anything like what it says it is.
Well,
it smells a little bit like peanuts.
It's got an earthy aroma.
Yeah, I did not. Well, to be fair, it's called peanut butter breath, not peanut butter. It's
literally a puff of peanut. Yeah, there ain't no peanut in this bitch.
A tiny poof.
Maybe
if
it's
you
fresher.
Will.
But, yeah, the strain is called Peanut Butter Breath, and it is said to be nutty and earthy with a creamy feel or flavor, like, upon exhale, and that it's slightly pungent and sour, which is pretty accurate.
It's more than slightly pungent.
Yeah.
But I don't get sour either. I just get...
It's a little sour.
I smell a little peanut.
There's a little sour on the exhale. But it's an evenly balanced hybrid. This one's 29%. And it's said to be good for treating conditions such as chronic pain, mood swings, appetite loss, and nausea. And it has, this one has 1.01 limonene, which is definitely found more in sativa strains. It's an uplifting, energizing terpene. And then that's pretty much the most significant one here, which leads me to believe that this one specifically is much more sativa leaning.
Great.
So that's great.
Looked at me with a face to say, and I'm done. Perfect. I mean, because we have a lot to get through.
Yes.
Because we're doing Jeffrey Dahmer.
Excuse me while I try and light my bowl in this inferno of wind.
Okay. It is not that cold in here. Like, okay.
It's not about being cold, it's just an inferno of wind.
You could also
I can't light my lighter.
Look. Cover it. Okay, to be fair, okay.
It's an inferno.
We're gonna do a boomerang on our Instagram story of the lighter.
It's an inferno.
Hold on hold, I have to do a boomerang real quick.
It's an inferno.
Oh, you're gonna be in it, because you look
no.
cute. Fine, just your hand, but you gotta
thank
hold
you.
The bowl in the other hand. Hold on, I have to get there. Guys, you have to come along for this ride, because it's very serious. Okay, story... boomerang.
Wait, let me get a good...
Can I have part of your body if your face and most of you is not in it?
I guess.
Tell me when.
Let me get a good one. Okay. Go.
Okay. Do you feel like you can see it enough and there's not too much of you? She's evaluating this really fucking hard. Hold on, let's do it again. Discard. Guys, we're gonna get it. I'm ready.
Okay. Get closer. No, I'm not in the wind. We'll try this later. We'll try it later.
Okay,
The point is, it's an inferno of wind. No, carry on.
So, we are definitely gonna have to break this up into at least two episodes. I'm just gonna say two. It depends how quickly I can get through it. But as you know, this man killed a lot of fucking people, and I got a lot of detail. I want him on my research on this one. I went deep.
There's shit to say.
I went deep into the archives, okay, with my precious time off. So if I seem a little speedy, it's just because we got a lot of shit to say, okay?
And that blast is off.
A little extra. She said blast off.
I just swallowed my hair.
You swallowed your hair?
Hair. Oh, it sucked in.
Okay.
Okay, go.
Jeffrey Lionel Dahmer. I did not know his middle name was Lionel.
Nerd.
Was born on May 21st, 1960 mm-hmm. in West Allis, Wisconsin. Wisconsin to Joyce Annette and Lionel Herbert Dahmer. Dahmer also had a younger brother named David who was 7 years younger than him. And when Jeffrey was 8 years old, his family moved to a place called Bath, like a bathroom, Bath, Ohio. I know. I was like, that's unfortunate.
You could have said a bathtub.
I mean, we're not going to talk about the Play-Doh situation. As the years went on, Jeffrey was increasingly withdrawn and really kept to himself with very minimal social interaction. This happened pretty early on in his childhood, but it became more and more apparent, especially between the ages of 10 and 15. He would show just no interest in hobbies or social interactions, like I mentioned, and he would just go around his neighborhood looking for dead animals. So pretty immediately, he was just like a little fucked in the head. And then he would go on to dissect these animals in his home and in the wooded area behind his house. I'm going to give a little trigger warning right quick. These animals were already deceased from what I could tell. So it's not like he probably did kill some animals, yeah. But like from this particular segment, I'm still going to give an animal.
That's the indicator. If your kid kills a small children, just get rid of them.
Yeah. It's like, no.
You don't need that in your life.
So,
don't, because then they'll come hunt you.
Correct.
I'm scared.
He did go as far as putting a deceased dog's head on a stake and left it in the woods behind his house.
I see.
And it was believed he would go back and visit these things. In addition to those behaviors, he gained like notoriety at his school by impersonating his mother's interior decorator, who had cerebral palsy. So he was always off kilter and appeared to have a pretty low moral compass there, because he thought disabilities were funny and killing animals was just like his pastime or whatever, dissecting them. And shocker, he also began drinking alcohol in these years, and he did become a full-fledged alcoholic by the time that he graduated high school. But he still graduated.
Hmm.
So, A for effort.
A for effort.
In 1977, when Jeffrey was 17 years old, his parents divorced and he went on to attend the Ohio State University.
The Ohio State University. Wow. Prestigious.
He did drop out after just one quarter after failing to attend the majority of his classes due to being drunk most of the
time. I'm dead.
At this time, his dad was pretty fucking fed up with his lackluster outlook on life, and he was just like, come on, like, you have to do something with your life. So he forced Jeffrey to enlist in the army, hoping that would make him, like, I don't know, make something of himself and just get on track and give a shit. Surprisingly, he did do very well at first, but he was eventually discharged after 2 years due to his alcoholism.
Hmm.
I found this pretty weird, but
which is legal and cannabis is not.
Facts. And I do way worse shit when I'm drinking.
And I just, that's rude.
So the army, when they discharged him when he was 21 years old in 1981, they told him they would pay for a plane ticket to wherever he wanted to go. I thought that was weird. I don't know why. They straight up were like, you don't have to go home, but you can't stay here. Gotta go somewhere. And Jeffrey was afraid to face his father with his failures, so he was like, I'm not going back there. So he decided to go to Miami Beach, Florida, because he was, quote-unquote, tired of the cold.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, I feel you on that.
I'm not Miami.
The majority of his time there, he worked at a hospital until he was kicked out for, please guess.
Alcoholism.
Correct. As a result of this failure, he did
Alcoholism?
He did have to go home after this, where he continued his alcohol abuse and was ultimately arrested in 1981 for drunk and disorderly conduct.
Typical.
In 1982, Jeffrey moved in with his grandmother in West Allis, where he was born. And he lived with her for 6 years from the ages of 22 to 28 years old. During this time, he was pretty much free to live as he pleased, because he was living in her basement, which led him to acting even more strange and distant. In one instance, his grandmother found a fully dressed male mannequin in his closet, which he had stolen from a store.
Steal that from a goddamn store?
But also, I didn't find that super strange. He was probably just struggling with a sexual identity, but at the time, apparently, that shit was wild.
Is no one picturing how this man stole a mannequin from a store?
He just walked in and was like,
he just was like, this is mine now, and he carried it out, and everyone was like, he brought that with him.
But, like, it's crazy that she was like, oh my god, he's got a mannequin dressed as a man.
What a freak.
Like, I mean, he was a freak before this, but, like,
there are weirder things than that.
That's not a concern. On another occasion, she found a .357 Magnum under his bed.
That's
which
more
I'll concerning. Give Granny that one. That's, like, okay.
That's concerning.
But, like, why are you digging under his shit?
Mannequin. It's never a mannequin.
It's never a mannequin. That's what Crime Junkies always says. Mm-hmm. There would often be terrible smells coming from the basement, and when questioned by his father, he told him that he had brought home a dead squirrel and dissolved it with chemicals. Why did this not alarm his father, you ask? Because his father was a chemist, and the one and only thing that he and Jeffrey had ever bonded over was chemicals and Jeffrey's interest in removing flesh from bones and the chemical process. So he and his dad had actually talked about that when he was a child, dissecting animals previously. Mm-hmm. And so it wasn't super weird that he was doing that, and his dad was kind of like, okay, cool, at least you're doing something. Fuck. Throughout these years, Jeffrey was also arrested twice for indecent exposure. Once in 1982 and once in 1986 when he was caught masturbating in front of two boys. Mm-hmm. Like a proper gentleman.
Wow.
In the summer of 1988, the year of my birth, Jeffrey's grandmother was like, hey, I'm gonna need you to move out because the basement reeks and you be acting weird as shit. I don't think she said it like that, but she definitely
was like,
you be
weird
as
shit, get the fuck out.
Which, good on her, but also, that shit's been smelling for 6 years, so, cool. He was able to find an apartment in Milwaukee's West Side, which was close to his job, or closer to his job, at the Ambrosia Chocolate Factory.
That gets me every time.
But, like, why are you gonna ruin chocolate for me,
like,
bro?
Right?
Like, okay, do you feel that way, too? Like,
chocolate!
Like, it's chocolate. It's wholesome. Why the fuck would you do
How
this
How dare
to
you? How dareth?
Asshole. How dareth? Exactly one day after moving into his apartment, Jeffrey was arrested on September 26, 1988, for drugging and sexually fondling a 13-year-old boy. We're not going to use this next segment to discuss how there are literally people still in prison for smoking weed, while this man gets a whole ass slap on the wrist for sexual assault of a minor.
Mm-hmm.
We're just not going to do it. So his harsh punishment, you might want to know. He was sentenced to 5 years probation and 1 year in a work release camp. And he was required to register as a sex offender, which is fucking useless.
I hate it here.
Whatever. That's Milwaukee, I guess. Super harsh, I know. Like, that punishment is just so much.
Much remorse.
Paroled early from the work release camp, 2 months early, at which time he found a new apartment. And shortly thereafter began his infamous and well-known string of murders that didn't end until his arrest in 1991.
If only he'd been imprisoned.
If only. Oh, it gets worse. There is something so specific that I did not know about him somehow that just, like, pisses me all the way off. So now I have the backstory, the geography, the history lesson. So what was Jeffrey doing all these years? Because it sure as hell wasn't fucking dissolving squirrels. Ew. I mean, maybe he was doing that too, but... Okay. We're going in, people. This is your last warning.
I'm scared.
It's about to get real. Okay. Hold on, I need a sip.
It's freezing in here.
You think just once you'd come in with a hoodie or sweatpants, but no.
I'm using this pillow as a blanket, and it's just...
A t-shirt and shorts every time. Okay, I was parched. So even though Jeffrey wasn't caught until his string of murders when he was older, his first murder actually happened when he was just 18 years old in the summer of 1978. His mother had moved out and his father was away on business, which was fairly normal. And when moving out, his mom took his younger brother, David. So Jeffrey had the home all to himself with no interruptions. I'm so sorry. That was
how does that work? Burp.
Because people, they didn't give a shit. They were like, fuck it. You're 18. You're an adult now.
But like, who's paying the bills?
Well, his dad still lived there. He was just away for work. Yeah, he just went away on business trips.
Business trips.
Correct. So, Jeffrey was driving down the road in Bath Township, Ohio, when he pulled up alongside an 18-year-old man named Stephen Hicks.
Oh, Stephen, run.
He was like a hippie, kind of like a rocker. He was the same age as Jeffrey. And it was stated that he was hitchhiking to a concert. And they got to chatting, and Jeffrey invited him to come back to his house to drink some beer, smoke some weed, and listen to records for a few hours.
No, not the reefer.
The reefer. I know. This is probably not the best story for us. Stephen accepted. It's hard to say why. I mean, it was the 70s. Hitchhiking was a big thing. He was probably tired of walking. Sounded like a good time. So he got into the passenger seat, and off they went.
That's crazy.
They spent the afternoon getting drunk and high together, and as they do, the substances ran out, and Steven was like, okay, cool, I gotta go, gotta get back on my way, all this free shit is used up, and I'm ready. That did not fly with Jeffrey there, and a switch went off in his head.
Jeffaroo.
And, yeah, to keep his new friend from abandoning him, inebriated as he always was, Jeff knocked Stephen unconscious with a 10-pound barbell weight just as he was bending down to pick up his jacket.
Sad.
Jeffrey decided that wasn't good enough, and so he knelt down next to Stephen's body and pressed the barbell weight into his throat until he had been strangled to death. He strangled the majority of his victims, so makes sense. He then proceeded to cut him into pieces and shoved his body into black trash bags, which he then put into his car. When it became nighttime and he felt a little bit safer, he was like, okay, I'm going to drive the evidence to a local dump site, get rid of this. He was weaving over the center line and was pulled over by a police officer.
I've had enough.
And the police officer asked him what he had in the bags and why he was out so late. And he said, they're full of grass clippings. And he was upset by his parents' recent divorce and thought driving the trash out to the dump would take his mind off of it. It makes perfect sense.
The dump has hours of operation.
Perfect sense. He did require a field sobriety test, which he did pass. And the cop unknowingly let a murderer carry the body parts away. I was like, bye.
The police are useless.
Correct. It was enough to shake Jeffrey up, though, and he was like, I gotta abort this plan. So he went back home and buried the bags underneath his house. I guess smart on him, because he was like, fuck no, that cop's on to me. That cop clearly didn't give a shit.
That cop clearly was not on to him at all.
Jeffrey didn't commit another murder for 9 years when he impossibly killed a man named Stephen Toomey.
Wait, wasn't the first guy named Steven?
Yeah, it was two guys named Steven.
Steven.
I know, poor Stevens.
The curse.
The curse of Steven. Dahmer met Steven at a gay bar called Club 219 on the night of September 15th, 1987. Toomey was working as a restaurant worker. After work, he was like, I'm going to go out and have some fun. And he was charmed by Jeffrey. Stephen was 25 years old, if I didn't say that, and Jeffrey invited him to spend the night in his hotel room at the Ambassador Hotel nearby, and they went back to room number 507, where they got blackout drunk. This one's kind of weird, because this is the only one, because Dahmer's always been very forthcoming, for the most part, with the details of murders and, you know, his impulses. But this one, the next morning, Dahmer had no memory of the night before due to his drunken stupor, but allegedly found Toomey hanging halfway off the bed with his chest brutally beaten in and blood coming out of his mouth. And Dahmer left immediately to buy the largest suitcase he could find.
I'm dead.
He put his body into it. And then he asked the bellboy to carry the suitcase to the cab for him. And then on the way back to his grandmother's.
The audacity.
The audacity.
White men.
Because now he lived with Granny. So on the way back, the cab driver made a comment about the foul smell coming from the suitcase, and Jeffrey was just like brushing it off. He allegedly let Toomey's body rot for a week before dismembering him in the basement and destroying the remains. He was never actually charged for this murder because Stephen's body or any other physical evidence was never found. So the sentencing judge refused to charge him without any proof beyond a reasonable doubt that he did it. And also, okay. Jeffrey had no, like, technical memory of committing the crime. He said he probably did it. But
okay,
that's that. So, as if that wasn't enough, Jeffrey then went on to murder a 14-year-old boy named Jamie Dockstader on January 16th, 1988. Jamie was hanging around outside of a popular gay bar, Club 219, from where Jeffrey also lured Stephen. He was unable to get inside due to him being a minor. He was known to frequently spend time around the club in search of romantic partners, and Jeffrey obviously decided it would be easier to lure a child from the street than to lure a man away from his friends and atmosphere. So he's a child murderer as well. So he offered Jamie $50 to make a video with him at his house, and together they went back to Jeffrey's grandmother's house.
A video? No.
Correct. He used that lure a lot, video or photos, and a lot of people did it.
Why?
I don't know, man. It was a different time. That's, I know we always say that, but like the 70s, man, it was just like a lot of chill. People just didn't think of it.
That wouldn't entice me.
But it also, you have to think, like, the gay community is not, like, super widely accepted. Like, they're probably like, okay, cool. Like, somebody in my group, you know what I mean? It's a more dangerous atmosphere.
It was.
Not that it's any better now, but you know what I mean. When he got there, Jeffrey drugged him, which was his method of choice. He drugged the majority of his victims. He strangled him, and he kept his body wrapped in a blanket in the wine cellar. For 1 week, he was left alone to rot on the floor, and then he stripped off his skin.
Oh, no.
Dissolved it.
No.
And crushed his bones using a sledgehammer and threw out plastic bags containing the remains for the garbage truck to take to the dump site.
No.
Correct. So that was a big thing with a lot of it, too, before he started, like, collecting body parts. Because this is a well-known case, so you probably already know this. He, like, fully disposed of so many people. So that can make it difficult, too, because it's just his word for it.
Mm.
But, as I said, he was not dissolving squirrels down there.
Mm.
Ugh, sorry, there's so many victims. This is just back to back to back. His next victim was 21-year-old Richard Guerrero. Who was 23 years old. Jeffrey met him on the evening of March 24th, 1988, and offered him $50 to make a video with him at his place. Guerrero only had $3 to his name, so he agreed to the offer. I mean, presumably grateful for extra money. Dahmer drugged, strangled, and sexually assaulted Guerrero before dissolving his body using an acid solution and flushing the consistency down the toilet.
I'm dead.
Correct. After Dahmer's final arrest, Richard's sister, I don't know if it's Janie, I'm going to say Janie Hagen, she broke America's heart by pleading, "I want to know what he did with my brother. I heard on the news that maybe my brother had been flushed down the toilet, and I want to know." She never got an answer, sadly, because Jeffrey never told her, and his remains were never discovered. So it's just, again, his word for it, which I think that's the most sadistic thing of all. Just give people the piece of, like, the answer,
right?
You know what I mean? There's a movie with Angelina Jolie called The Changeling, where mm-hmm. it's based on a true story where a woman gets back a different child that's not her child, and that she's, like, trying to convince the LA authorities, and they're like, "No, you're wrong." And she's like, "Well, my child was circumcised and this kid's not. I don't know how you fake that." And anyway, all that to say that the killer like, told her that he killed her son and then was like, just kidding, I didn't. And she never got the answer. And she literally, this woman died spending her life trying to figure out if her son actually died or not.
Wow.
I know, it was horrible. That's so I think up. That's, like, the most sadistic thing.
Yeah.
So, this next victim we're going to talk about is super important for later. Mm-hmm. And it was the thing I didn't know about.
Mm.
So, his next victim, I'm going to do my best to pronounce it. His name was Keeson Synthesomphone. He was 13 years old, mm-mm, and he was lured into Jeffrey's first apartment less than 24 hours after he had moved in there. This is the boy that he molested, that he didn't kill. So Keeson was drugged and molested, but managed to escape and quickly found police. Jeffrey, as we know, was charged with sexual assault and enticing a child for immoral purposes, spending 1 week in jail before posting bail. I'm laughing because I'm uncomfortable.
Wow, 1 week.
He was sentenced 4 months later, pleading for mercy by stating that he was an alcoholic and a homosexual with sexual problems. Mm. They're not synonymous.
No.
It's fine. And he offered the transparent excuse that he thought Keeson was 19 years old. He received a light term of 5 years probation, like we said. But as a result of this, he did have to move out of his brand new apartment. The parents of Keeson were promised that the man who traumatized their son would be locked away for a long time, so they chose not to take the case to court. They never found out what Jeffrey looked like, leaving Keeson the only person in the family that would be able to identify him. And this is super important for later.
Okay.
So just keep that in your little brain.
Okay, I won't.
I don't know if that's going to come up in the first half or the second half, so it could be even harder to remember.
Okay, I won't.
on March 25th, 1989, which was Easter Sunday, while Jeffrey was a free man awaiting trial for sexually assaulting a 13-year-old child.
Living his life. Making my way downtown.
Walking fast.
I hate it.
Can we please make a Jeffrey Dahmer for the making my way downtown? So he went on the hunt at La Cage Aux Folles, a local gay bar, where he met an aspiring model who was a 26-year-old man named Anthony Sears, and he successfully conned him into coming home with him. Jeffrey knew the police were probably keeping tabs on his apartment while he awaited trial, so Anthony had a friend, Jeff Connors, drive the pair to Dahmer's grandmother's house where he dropped them off, reminding Anthony that he was meant to have lunch with his mom the next day and to call if he needed a ride. Jeffrey then escorted Anthony inside where he drugged, strangled, and dismembered him.
I'm sorry. What? How do you... Someone dropped him off there.
Yeah, that... Oh, it gets worse. It gets worse. So, Jeffrey admittedly found Sears to be exceptionally attractive, and he scalped him because he loved his ponytail. He was super mesmerized with this guy, so much so that he took his skull to work with him a few days after so that he could take breaks throughout, like, the day to look at it. And he was quoted later saying, "If I could have kept him longer, all of him, I would have." 3 years later, investigators would find Anthony's skull, mummified scalp, and preserved penis inside of Jeffrey's notorious apartment.
Not the penis.
The penis.
No.
It just, it keeps rolling. We're rolling, guys. We're just cruising through. Because I don't even know how else to tell the story. Like, these are just the facts. I'm like, and then he died. And then he also died.
And then
he died. He died. So.
And here we are.
And here we are. On May 20th, 1990, this was 2 weeks after moving into his now famous apartment, 213 at the Oxford apartment complex.
You know what's weird? Wasn't the bar 213?
219.
Oh, fuck.
But close, still. It would be super bizarre if it was the same. At this time, Jeffrey approached 33-year-old Raymond Smith, who also went by the name Ricky Beeks, at Club 219.
Ricky Beeks.
Ricky Beeks.
DJ Ricky Beeks.
I'm dead. Per his usual, Jeffrey offered him money to come home with him to drink and take nude photographs. where, surprise, he then drugged Raymond, strangled him, and had oral sex with his corpse.
That's rude.
I don't know how that works, like, physically, but...
No.
It made me burp.
Ew.
My body's trying to expel it.
The demon.
Dahmer then dismembered him, placing his severed head in the refrigerator afterwards and dissolving his body in acid. He used his bones as decor in his apartment, and he later stated that the corpse of this victim was the first corpse he had ever had sex with. So.
Great. Escalation.
I feel like I should have recorded a disclaimer before going into this, but I also feel
like... We always put a disclaimer.
Yeah, but I just feel like I should have done an extra one, like a trigger warning or something.
Contains explicit content.
But also, people know it's Jeffrey Dahmer.
Come on, so. It's Jeffrey Dahmer.
Facts. I just needed something to break up the monotony of my sentence that is constantly, his next victim, his next victim. So his next victim was Eddie Smith, who was 36 years old. His friends called him Shake, but it's spelled like Shake, like the religious Shake, not like Shake a Bag. I don't know why you would shake.
Chic?
A Sheik? Is that okay, look, I'm a little contact high. I apologize to the community. Maddie has corrected me. It is Chic. Mm-hmm. That would make sense.
It'd be funny if I was wrong, but I think
no, you're correct. I was incorrect. He was noted as being the life of the party everywhere he went. He was kind. He was fun. He reminds me of me. And sadly and bizarrely, he was friends with Jeffrey before becoming his victim. He had hung out with Jeffrey at his apartment on multiple occasions and always had a great time. For whatever
reason.
This
is why you trust no one.
Correct. But did he not see, like, the bone decor?
I don't know.
On the evening of June 14th, 1990, Eddie left a Milwaukee place called the Phoenix Bar and met with Jeffrey a little bit after that. Jeffrey gave him a glass of liquor spiked with strong sedatives, and he became unconscious. And from there, Jeffrey strangled his friend to death before cutting off his skin and dissolving his body in a 57-gallon drum of muriatic acid. And he also used Eddie's bones as decoration in his apartment, as he often did. During Jeffrey's trial, a relative of Eddie's mourned all Eddie wanted was to be Dahmer's friend, which makes me really sad. I hate everyone. I need like a little shake off real quick. I'm a little overwhelmed by all the death.
The death and despair.
I know we've had some light episodes, and like that's good to break up these episodes, but then when I get into these, I'm like, holy shit.
Mother of God.
Mother of the Lord. I hit my mic.
How?
So sorry.
How?
I just, like, don't know, like, how do you have time for a job? You're so busy. Like
being a chocolatier. Okay. Fuck off.
I don't know why. Like, I knew he worked in a chocolate factory, but when you outed him as a chocolatier, that was too much for me. Okay. Jeffrey's ninth victim was named Ernest Miller, and he was a 23-year-old dancer who met Jeffrey outside of a bookstore. This is the same bookstore that Jeffrey would go on to meet another victim at.
That would be a meet-cute, but...
But not.
Oh.
He got invited to the apartment under the pretense that he would be paid $50 to pose nude for Jeffrey's photos. Shortly after arriving and beginning to prepare the drinks, Jeffrey realized that he only had 2 sedatives left when he usually would use 3 sedatives.
Mm.
And he was like, oh shit, what do I do? But he was like, you know what? I'm going to use what I have because he's already here and I want to do it. So Ernest Miller did become unconscious after drinking his drink. And presumably because of the lesser dosage, it didn't last very long and he woke up. Jeffrey panicked, not wanting him to leave, and fatally stabbed him in the throat with a knife that was lying nearby. And he then hovered over his body, taking photographs with his Polaroid camera as Ernest lie on the carpet bleeding to death.
Can he not?
He's such a fucking weirdo. Dahmer then dissolved his body in acid, except for the biceps, which he wrapped and put in the freezer. He soaked his bones in bleach, and he kept the entire skeleton in his closet.
Okay. He really has skeletons in his closet.
He truly does.
I'm dead.
I am. I keep reading my notes thinking, oh, I'm to the part where we're going to stop. But we're not there yet. And I'm like, fuck, I gotta keep going. Like,
wow, this is a lot.
Oh, no. On September 24th, 1990, a man named David Thomas was hanging out at the mall after a couple relatives had dropped him off when he was approached by Jeffrey. Thomas was a 23-year-old man from a nice family that he seemed to be close with, and he had two children.
Oh, no.
That always breaks my heart.
Why was he at the mall alone?
Why was he had dropped off at the mall when he was old enough to have two kids?
I know. What the fuck?
That's judgmental. I don't know his life. I'm just mad that I don't have kids. While chatting it up at the mall, you know, meet cute number two, Jeffrey somehow convinced him to accompany him, come back to the apartment. I don't think he, like, proposed nude photos. I think he was just like, hey, like, let's be friends. Let's smoke some reefer.
Yeah.
Once there, he got the typical sedative-laced alcohol and became unconscious. In a sudden change of, I don't know, something in his head, Jeffrey decided that Thomas wasn't his type. But he felt the retaliation would be too bad if he just let him sleep it off, so he decided to strangle him to death anyway.
Oh.
And then afterwards, he just proceeded with dismembering him, which he video recorded and took photographs of dissolving his skin again in acid and keeping the full skeleton in his closet next to the skeleton of Ernest Miller.
I mean, are these things hanging up? Like, did he connect them with some sort of string?
Know. Like, I don't know if he just,
or is the bones just, like, piled in the corner, like,
There's photos of all of this, but I have never had the heart to look these up, even though I'm a morbid person.
That's a lot.
Even though this guy wasn't his type, he also saved his biceps and wrapped them in plastic bags.
Okay.
Next to Ernest Miller's biceps.
Biceps, that's so weird.
And the extremely graphic Polaroids that he took of the dismemberment process are all that Thomas's sister ended up having to identify his body with.
I'm so over it.
That part, like, really hurt my feelings.
Oh.
Like, there's no other way you can do that shit. Like, there's nothing else you can do besides traumatize a family member for the rest of their lives. Like, that makes me sick. Oh, guys. He had so many victims. And it gets so much worse later. Okay.
How do you get that fucked up?
Well, in interviews I watched, she was like, no, my childhood was fine. Like, nothing happened to me. I just, like, want to know what people's insides look like. Like, he just... I mean, he was diagnosed with a couple of, like, actual disorders, but things that multiple people have been diagnosed with, you know, millions, I'm sure, and they're not doing this shit, so...
No, they ain't.
His next victim was named Curtis Strotter, and he was a 19-year-old aspiring model as well. He was just chilling at a bus stop on February 18th, 1991, when Jeffrey approached him and lured him to his apartment to take nude photographs, promising him $50. Curtis is the only victim of Jeffrey's that he didn't drug first. Instead, he just immediately strangled him with his belt while Curtis was performing oral sex on Jeffrey. I feel like, okay, I need to say something. I feel like that's risky as fuck. Like, what's to stop him from biting off your penis?
Right?
Like, if you're, I don't know, because I've obviously never been in that situation and someone tried to strangle me. But I feel like you would get, like, immediately clamped. I don't know.
I would.
I have thoughts about that.
I would try.
As you can probably guess, he dismembered him. And... he kept his skull to preserve after crushing the rest of his bones and disposing of his remains in the nearby dump.
How?
I just don't understand how people like this just never get caught. We're almost done for this episode, for this portion. Thank God, because I need a mental break. Another unfortunate victim of Jeffrey's was Errol Lindsay, who was 19 years old, who also agreed to pose nude for Jeffrey's photos in exchange for $50. They started talking in April of 1991 outside of the same bookstore that he had lured Ernest Miller from 6 months before. And the situation played out pretty much the same. He became unconscious after he took the drugs. But this time, Jeffrey wanted to try out an experiment he had in mind. So he decided that he wanted a living companion that lacked conscious thought, rendering them completely submissive to him. He attempted to achieve this for the first time by using a drill to drill a hole into Errol's skull while he was passed out, and he injected the muriatic acid into his brain. Errol woke up, likely due to his skull being drilled into, but was acting perfectly fine. He knew where he was and who he was with. Jeffrey, in a moment of frustrating failure, drugged him once more and strangled him to death. He then had oral sex with the corpse before dismembering him and disposing of the body. And he kept his skull, as he had done previously. One thing that gave me, like... I'll save that for later. Moving on. The victim's sister gained slight fame after her victim impact statement at trial, due to the fact that she charged at Jeffrey, screaming, "I hate you, Jeffrey," and cursing at him. And it took literally 5 men to pull this small woman back from killing him with her bare hands.
I mean, bless.
Bless. And that is where we're going to stop, because I'm halfway through my notes, and I honestly need a mental break.
Yeah.
And it is sadly going to be a whole week in between episodes, because honestly, we're doing our best, but we have full-time jobs.
You know how it goes.
So we'll pick back up on his next victim named Anthony Hughes when we come back next week. So thanks for hanging in there. Go smoke. I'm not going to promote drug use. Go do whatever you need to do
as in a qualified medical patient, or in a recreational state, or in a country where it's legal, like motherfucking Spain.
Live. Go off.
Okay.
Otherwise, do whatever you need to do to wash this out of your brain.
Correct.
So sorry for your loss. I feel all sad and pitiful, and I can't think of anything happy to turn this around. So we're just gonna go.
And goodbye.